Panis angelicus, fit panis hominum, dat panis celicus, figuris te.
Hello, this is Blaise Bonpain with World Focus. We celebrate the life of Phil Berrigan with so many memories. He reminded us of Isaiah, Jeremiah, or John the Baptist. In 1968, 13 of us sat in the basement of 1620 S Street in Washington, D.C., as he presented a plan to napalm the draft files at Catonsville, Maryland. The question for the people of the United States was, is it better to burn paper or people? 9 of the 13 entered into the action. Many of us were present at that famous trial with William Kunstler, Bishop Pike, Dorothy Day, and many other peacemakers. We went on to form the Berrigan Defense Committee on the West Coast. This draft file-burning action was imitated about 100 times in the United States. A good deal of paper was incinerated. We are not aware of any injury to any person in this wave of nonviolent civil disobedience. We can't afford the luxury of many such reminiscences. However, the present moment is even more challenging. Phil Berrigan, presente. You stand out as a beacon of light in a very dark hour, and you will be remembered long after the current gallery of psychotic warmongers is rightfully forgotten. And now we stand on the verge of an unnecessary, illegal, and immoral slaughter. We must rise to the occasion in resistance. We were betrayed by our Congress as they gave in to the powers of corporate greed. As we oppose this criminal war in the Middle East, we will demand that our hard-earned tax money be used for education, health care, housing, and human needs rather than mass murder. We're especially happy about the coming together of four peace groups in Los Angeles, No War in Iraq, and also the event that is a matter of a coalition of the Coalition for World Peace, ANSWER, Not In Our Name, and the Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace. This is a coalition of coalitions, and we're very happy that it's coming about, and that includes also the interfaith communities that are United for Justice and Peace. A quote from Phil Berrigan, "War on terrorism by the U.S. is impossible. We are the number one terrorist," unquote, Phil Berrigan. The confusion of religion and state has been one of the greatest causes of warfare. Our forefathers developed a religion called Manifest Destiny as they pictured themselves called to rule from sea to sea. Adolf of the Third Reich was fascinated by the concept of Manifest Destiny and the religiosity of Nazism. We must transcend all sectarianism. We must give the lie to warmongers who long to create a war between Islam and Christianity or between any other combination of religions. Actually, the name of one's religion isn't meaningful. One can profess any religion by name and be a devil or a saint. The name of the religion is irrelevant. The only gauge and valid gauge is the spirituality that is shown by conduct, which reflects justice, peace, joy, love, endurance, patience, and compassion is the fruit of valid spirituality. Anything else seems to be a sham. That is what led John Lennon to say, "Imagine no religion." If religion does not promote the fruits of the Spirit, it would be better to imagine no religion. The international movement for justice and peace has more spirituality than any religion which attempts to bless war. War is not to be blessed. War is to be abolished, along with the slavery and servitude which it demands. Everyone can do something. Workers who stuff envelopes and send out emails are messengers of peace. Putting 500,000 people on the streets of Washington, D.C. on Saturday, January 18th, will be done by messengers of peace. On January 19th, the Grassroots Peace Council will be convened in Washington, D.C. This is the Martin Luther King weekend, and we will honor him as we recall his words at the Riverside Church on April 4, 1967. The greatest purveyor of violence in the world today is my own government, unquote, Dr. King. The 30 or so wars now taking place in the name of religion have no authentic spiritual substance. They are fraudulent. They are simply political conflicts using religion as a cloak for malice. Now do we understand why John Lennon said, "Imagine no religion. Keep your roots, keep your religion, but don't let it be used to oppress innocent people. Religion must not bless war."
Sicut eco per tua semitas duc nos quotendimus ad lucem quam in habitas. Panis angelicus, fit panis hominum, dat panis celicus, figuris terminum.
Today we are privileged to have Sarah El-Tantwani with us, who is Director of Communications for the Muslim Public Affairs Council. Sarah has appeared on all major television, radio, and print media, discussing issues of concern to American Muslims and other Americans, including civil liberties, the Middle East, the peace process, education, and religious freedom. She has spoken on these topics at various forums and many universities, and did her graduate studies, received her master's in Middle Eastern studies at Harvard University. We're just extremely happy to have you with us today, Sarah. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Well, now you have an upcoming conference, which is going to be extremely important. The Muslim Affairs Council will have an interfaith conference on responses to war and programs for peace to be held December 21st to 22nd in Long Beach. What is the objective of this conference?
The objective is twofold. I think the first is to gather up the Muslim community, the American Muslim community, and to provide a forum in which to discuss all of the major issues that have come up since September 11th that we need to deal with, to analyze what's been happening, to provide some guidance and some solutions, and mostly and to hear feedback. Of course, we're inviting everyone else to have that discussion, since you know we're all living together here and we all share these same concerns. So I think that the other part of what's important about this conference is so that American Muslims and other Americans get the chance to be together in one forum to discuss frankly all of the issues that need to be discussed since September 11th, and most importantly to come up with strategies for the future about issues like war, civil liberties, democracy, and pluralism in our future here in America.
I think it's so impressive to see that at this conference you're going to have spokespeople from Christian religions, from Judaism. You're going to have the Reverend George Regas, and you're going to have Reverend James Lawson.
Yes.
And you're going to have Rabbi Beliak. And this is quite impressive that you have such a mix here of all the different backgrounds. I think that will help it enormously. Now, where could people call to get further information on this?
Yeah, they can call our Los Angeles office at 213-383-3443. Or check our website, www.mpac.org, for more information for the full program. But to register, you've got to call 213-383-3443.
Very good. And what are you – you're speaking about threats to American democracy. What are some of the threats that you're going to speak about?
Well, we're talking about – primarily the erosion of civil liberties that we've seen take place in the Ashcroft Attorney General's office. It's just something that, of course, not only affecting American Muslims, but all of us. It's it's just amazing the speed with which some of our basic liberties are being eroded. And we're bringing in people from the ACLU that we've been working with, have done a great job with us since the beginning to discuss that. Another element of it is the idea of, I mean, in the Muslim community, we've been thinking a lot about how to have the government hear the voices more of your average, American that doesn't want war, that doesn't want strife between religions, that doesn't want a civilizational conflict. And one of the conclusions we've drawn is that, unless we get some election reform, unless we get end corporate financing of our elections, then the chances of us as people actually being heard, the real people, is severely eroded. So we're going to talk also about this as a threat to American democracy, and we're going to talk about how all of us can organize to see that our voice gets heard more in the federal government.
Well, Sarah, how are you going to deal with the question of religious extremism? We call it fundamentalism. We see the name used frequently with people who are involved in assassinations. How will you deal with that entire matter?
Well, I really agree with something you said earlier, which is that religious extremists belong in one camp and everyone else belongs in another camp. And it doesn't matter which religion you're in. But if your orientation toward religion is one that is exclusive, one in which you believe you're on the right side and everyone else is on the wrong side, and that you're willing to go to any means to propagate your view, then that's extremism and that's dangerous. Within the Muslim community, we obviously have religious extremism that needs to be dealt with, and that other Muslims need to come out and say is a problem. And, MPAC has been doing that for several years. But, of course, the time is now to reiterate that and to say, what can we do?
It's there in every religion.
Right.
I mean, we that's why it's so hard to distinguish between this type of fundamentalism.
Right.
You could actually have a nationalistic fundamentalism the same way. It becomes quasi-religious by acting
exactly.
as if your nation is somehow the answer to all problems. That is just...
That's a very important, good point. And that's why we have people like Reverend Regas and Haim Beliak. And these are people who also have taken a posture within their own face that say, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson does not, they don't represent us. Extremist settlers do not represent us. And we're saying the same thing, that terrorists don't represent us. And, and everyone needs to kind of...
This amazing situation where Falwell and Robertson are encouraging people to go to support Ariel Sharon in order to conquer the Palestinians, and this will lead to the Battle of Armageddon, and that's going to lead to the second coming of Jesus. It is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
If it wasn't so true that it's happening,
because I know certainly I've been part and parcel of religious studies all of my life, and as far as I know, if we're looking at the case of Jesus, no one needs to tell him when to return to the earth, and no one is going to set the date, not Jerry Falwell or anybody They're so off base that it almost would be comic if it weren't so tragic. It could lead, as Rabbi Beliak says, to a third world war. And this is something that can't work. Now, we have this problem, and you're going to deal with it at the conference, of the media related to the state and hate, how those things come together. How do you see the media dealing with hatred and the state?
Well, I think that the media, the mainstream media, I'm sure as you're aware of here at KPFK, tends to reduce to the ridiculously one-dimensional elements, peoples and cultures and religions and political situations. What we have in the media now when it comes to Islam, Muslims, the Middle East, the Palestinians, all of these things, is we have some people in the media trying to paint this as a one-dimensional struggle between Western civilization and the other, or the Eastern civilization, Muslim civilization, whoever attacked us. And so what you're seeing is two things. You're seeing this one-dimensional view of Islam, not taking into account that this is a religion with 1.2 billion people, that's 1,400 years, 41 different countries, et cetera, et cetera. It's impossible to talk about this group as one thing. And you see that just essentialized and discussed, you know, everyone's an expert now on Islam and Muslims and what went wrong with Muslim civilization, all this other stuff. The other thing is that going back to people like Falwell and Robertson, I mean, these guys are getting an unbelievable amount of airtime, a disproportionate amount of airtime when you take into account the real sentiments of American Christians. These guys are up there propagating their views as Christianity. They're, you know, you've got Robertson, who called the Prophet Muhammad a wild-eyed brigand and a terrorist, or Jerry Falwell called him a terrorist, people like Franklin Graham saying Islam is an evil, wicked, violent religion. And they're on there. I mean, they're just media darlings at this point. And it's a very dangerous situation of propaganda against the Muslim community here.
It's awesome to many of us. And whatever they're calling themselves, I see no relationship between them and Christianity. It's just not there.
It's just – it's hate speech, you know, and it's as much a relationship with Christianity as some people who speak for Islam or Judaism are, you know – propagating hate, as you said, using politics, using their agendas, using religion to propagate these agendas. And these guys need to be stopped. I mean, you know, we're very much – I'm very much jealous of free speech and regard free speech is very important. But these guys are being a disproportionate – given a disproportionate amount of time. They're not being opposed. And I really think that for – that they are creating a climate of hatred that is extremely dangerous propaganda against the American Muslim community, endangering our whole society. I mean, it's teaching us to sort of think in one dimension about people, and that can't be ever a good thing about anyone.
No, it certainly can't. And they are joining in with the warmongers from the state as well. And that's – and taking – it appears that Mr. Bush is very much aligned – with their perspective.
Well, they would love to paint it that way, yeah, and it seems that way.
Now, to attend this conference, what is the number that people could call?
213-383-3443.
Very good, and I think it will be a very meaningful gathering. This is the 21st – no, the 21st and 22nd of December, 2 days. Excellent. And how about the various legislations that have come down, the Patriot Act, has that impacted on the Muslim community?
Definitely. I mean, we've well, the Patriot Act has impacted everyone in the sense that our privacy is being eroded, in the sense that we can end up on lists that we're not allowed to access and that we don't know we're on. We've seen a great rise in profiling, and you get a situation that the Justice Department has largely, as opposed to gone after people who are suspected terrorists based on their actions, they've replaced that with going after people based on their religion and ethnicity. We not only think that that goes against the spirit of the law, against American traditions, it's also not a good security measure.
It's a very bad approach. It didn't help the people that were in the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, aliens, so-called, are supposed to register now. Our engineer, Nathan Thompson, has just observed people down at the federal building that had to line up there and register. Some of them were taken away in handcuffs. And this registration has become a very serious thing. People either register or they're listed as criminals.
Correct.
And if they have any negative information on them, or if they have anything that's out of order with their papers, they are imprisoned.
And I've already heard of a situation in which people have gone to register. I think there was one Iranian man and maybe also a Pakistani man who went in to register and were arrested.
Oh, yes.
So it sounds like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't in some ways.
Yeah, you have to register. Yeah. And if you do register, you may be arrested. That's what it's come down to. This seems to be the beginning process of some kind of police state behavior. And if it applies to one segment of society, it will certainly apply to others as time goes on. I think this is a very dangerous trend at this particular time. I have a theory, and I don't know what you'd think of it, but in the beginnings of Christianity, the Christian people were illegal and clandestine. It was against the law to be a Christian until 312 AD, when the Emperor Constantine, who was a Roman emperor, became a Christian. And when he became a Christian, everybody was excited about it because they were no longer being fed to the lions and killed because it was a death penalty for being a member of Christianity. Well, the unfortunate thing is that Constantine took his Christianity and joined it with the sword and started going all through the known world at that time with the attitude of, you will become a Christian or we'll kill you. Now, I have a theory that this muscular Christianity led to the formation of what became Islam as a reaction to militaristic Christianity. I don't know if you've ever dealt with a problem like that, because Muhammad came later, you know. He followed 3 centuries after Constantine, and after 3 centuries of very militant Christianity, which after that period led to crusades.
Right.
And so on. I don't know if you have a thought on that.
Yeah, I've never quite thought of it that way. I know that when the prophet first had his revelations, it was in Arabia at a time in which there were Christians and Muslims, but the main rulers of the tribes were pagans, idol worshippers. Yeah. And so the main struggle was against that form of idolatry. In Islam, there's a lot of reference, of course, to Christianity and to, we believe in most of, all of the same prophets. Jesus is a prophet in Islam.
Yes.
So the Christian tradition is very much there. But I think the spirits of the two religions are similar in the sense that it's not meant to be, as you're saying, a militaristic, muscular state apparatus. It's meant to be a faith. It's meant to be a set of ideas. And I think that Islam, when properly understood, not that I could ever do that, but from what I can tell, it's more about, we don't have a clergy. That's expressly anti-Muslim. And it's really more about, it's a subjective type of experience. And I think that to me, that's what Christianity is also saying. And so it makes me very weary of attempts to formalize and rigidify the spirits.
I can understand that, because if we abstract from Christianity and we go to Hinduism, we see Hinduism is one of the most all-inclusive religions in the world, with many gods and ready to absorb whatever deities there are. And here we see Hindu fundamentalism attacking Islam in India.
Yeah.
It is obviously just being used as a cover for malice. It has nothing to do with the Hindu Vedas, with the Hindu background, or the Hinduism practice.
That would be absurd. I mean, Hinduism is an ancient religion.
Yeah, and it's anti any of this kind of conflict.
Sure.
And now it comes up politically. It seems that the politicalization of religion in this fashion becomes extremely harmful.
I agree.
And that's a problem that we have. Then within every religion, we have different sects. We have now Sunni and Shia.
Mm-hmm.
And would you care to explain the difference between the two?
Yeah, I mean, it's not something I particularly care about, to be honest with you. I think myself and a lot of Muslims I know would be just call themselves Muslim and try not to worry about the divisions. The major difference in Sunnism versus Shiism goes back to the question of inheriting power, where the Shias believed that the caliphate should have been given to the descendants of the Prophet through Ali, whereas the Sunnis opted for a consultative process to choose a leader. And then, of course, over the centuries in different parts of the world, Shiism and Sunnism have developed slightly differently. There's slight differences in terms of practice and, of course, different historical situations. The Ottomans went into there's different pieces of history in different parts of the world that have made some Sunnis turn to Shia and Shiism, some Sunnis be converted into Shiism.
I find go ahead.
Well, I mean, but as far as practice, I mean, again, if we're talking about the real essence of the faith, as opposed to political manifestations, it's something that, most, I think, Muslims try not to to think about or worry about too much.
Well, I think what happens to compare and contrast that with the splits in Christianity is very interesting, because we had a relatively united Christianity till about 1054 AD. And then it was a question whether Rome would be the center or Constantinople would be the center. And it was a conflict between the Greek and the Latin churches. And sure enough, a doctrinal issue was used for the dividing. And I think very often doctrines are used to divide people. They came up with the idea that the Holy Spirit proceeds from the Father and the Son. Now, that's what the Latin church said. And then the Greek church said, no, the Holy Spirit proceeds only from the Father. And over that argument, which no one could solve and which no one has solved since, has become 1,000 years of separation in Christianity. So I think these things happen so often over doctrinal issues that are once again a cover for political issues.
I would argue that, although, you know, I don't want to insult, I mean, I happen to come from the Sunni extraction, but I wouldn't want to insult Shias that, you know, deeply identify with that particular point in history. But yeah, to me, at least, and to others, I think that I agree with you that oftentimes there's a lot of evidence pointing to the fact that these are political issues where doctrine is being exploited.
We would take the same approach. I mean, we certainly feel very sad about the division in Christianity, and we don't tend to argue that we were right, you know, as we understand there are people on the other side that were born there geographically.
Right.
Religion for many people is a question of geography. Your parents instruct you as to what you are and where you came from. They tell you, look, you are a Republican and a Presbyterian. This is what you are.
Yeah.
So, and that's the way most people get their religion and their political background.
I agree. Yeah.
And so we certainly do have to be respectful for those that see it in another way. Were you behind the formation of this particular conference that's coming up? Did you help to plan it?
I've helped to plan it. I've helped to suggest some speakers. And yeah, I mean, I'm involved in the process, definitely.
Well, it's absolutely a wonderful thing, and I hope our listeners can be there. It's been really a pleasure having you with us. I've been speaking to Sarah El-Tantwani, who is the communications director for the Muslim Public Affairs Council. And to find out more about this upcoming conference, what number should they call?
213-383-3443.
This is December 21st and December 22nd. I hope our listeners will be a part of it and possibly attend. This is Blaise Bonpain, and the program is World Focus.
Ecce panis angelor, factus cibus viatorum, vere panis filiorum, non mi tendus canibus in figuris presignatur, cum Isaac immolatur. Agnus Pascae Dei.